Hi, welcome back. You with Truth News Radio. Well, in hour two of today's show, I've got a very special interview lined up for you. Filmmaker Kevin P. Miller is coming back on Truth News Radio. He's been on the show a couple of times before, and we've been in previous shows talking about his earlier films, mainly his work in relation to psychiatric medication and SSRI drugs, which was covered in the film Generation RX. And that was a really important film, and I introduced a lot of people to Kevin Miller in Sydney as a result of that, and we actually did some screenings of the film in Sydney. And it was a really, really important contribution to the field, because there aren't a lot of quality films that just come at it from a really impartial angle, a really good documentary filmmaking style. And Kevin is deeply involved in this, and as a result of the work he did on the first film, many of the people who he contacted got back to him later with more information. There were many letters that he received, and as a result of all that, over the next couple of years, he began to formulate an idea for a second film, which ended up becoming Letters from Generation RX, which extends the material that's covered in the first film. In my opinion, actually goes deeper. I found it more powerful in a lot of ways, because it really goes deep into these personal stories, and these stories are really, really harrowing. They are absolutely bone-chilling tales that will, when you watch the film, when you understand the scope of what has happened to these families, you will realize that what people are telling you, like people like Dr. Peter Breggin, when they say that these drugs are incredibly dangerous, that they need to be regarded as a very, very, very dangerous chemical concoction, you'll realize that this is not an exaggeration. This is actually just a simple factual matter. But the problem is, of course, that the PR campaign, the marketing campaign, the propaganda campaign behind the promotion of these drugs over the past two decades or more has been to steer the general public away from that realization. But despite that, the information has leaked through. And this is what we're going to be talking about in a lot of depth today. And I've got a lot of questions and a lot of threads I want to follow in today's discussion. But that's enough from me. Welcome to the show, Kevin P. Miller.
Oh, it's so good to be back with you again. You have such a great show. I'm thrilled to talk about this with you and more over the next hour.
Absolutely, Kevin. Now, one thing I want to get into today's show, and I might just start with this because I think it's very important. I mean, your film is there for all to see, and I want people to find it and get it and download it, and we'll provide them all the information for that. One thing I want to talk about is the problem that we have, that ordinary members of the public have, who are not medical experts. We are not qualified to be judges of the efficacy of any kind of medical drug, because we don't supposedly have the expertise. And when those of us who begin to wake up to the issues start to talk about this and try to share our knowledge with friends, and often people who are on medications, we're often told in no uncertain terms to basically shut up, because we basically are treated as non-experts and therefore not qualified to have an opinion. Now, of course, you're not a medical expert either, but you've done so much research that that people would be a bit hesitant, I think, to question you. But, you know, it's a real problem. And I just wonder, like, because you've spoken to so many people now, you must have encountered this. And what can you say to us? How can we express ourselves? How can we work to convince other people, or to extend our knowledge when there is this this kind of wall of prejudice that is basically created by this I guess this attitude within society that's created that that you basically, you know, do what the doctor says, and if you criticize or question medical procedures, well, you need to be an expert. Now, could you just briefly give me your response to that?
Sure. I mean, it's certainly a real problem in Australia.
Yeah.
It's a dire problem. And it's kind of funny in a way, because one would think that Australia would follow at least the lead of the United Kingdom, who has been very outspoken, particularly as these drugs pertain to children and teenagers.
Yes.
And we're talking about the antidepressants now. And, you know, since, as we say in the film, 2004, the UK government came out and said that they were not only putting warning, they did everything but ban the drugs for children and teens, with one exception used, quote, more carefully, supposedly, end quote.
Yes.
Was Prozac, because of the half-life of the chemical and all of this stuff. But, you know, when you start talking about these issues, and you're right, I've encountered it quite literally hundreds, if not thousands of times at this juncture in my study of this.
Yeah.
I think that I always talk about integrity of the information. It's one of the reasons I love coming on with you, is because you know, you're one of the few who I think identify the need for having verifiable information.
And, yeah.
And, you know, so when someone goes out and there's a school shooting and they go on Twitter or Facebook or any of the other social media sites or elsewhere, and they immediately draw a link and say, well, this person was on an antipsychotic or an antidepressant, and that's the reason for this school shooting, you know, it's really not appropriate, and it's not something that I've adopted.
Yeah.
I've run away from, as a matter of fact. So I think the first thing for your audience, first and foremost, is to be careful what you share. And like anything else, make certain that you have diversified sources for all of your news, health, medical, and otherwise. And one of the things that I've done to this degree in preparing for the release of the film is that I've started a Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/lettersfromgenerationRx. And we've got about 7,000 people there to date, and it's been going up exponentially. And I really use that page with the news and information, studies and insights that people aren't able to gather from on their own, and even with the premise that, well, if we go to this site put together by Kevin P. Miller, that we're at least expecting that there's going to be a modicum of integrity here in terms of the information. It doesn't mean that everything that I put on that site is proven, or, you know, a proven connection between X, Y, and Z, but it does mean that there is some commentary in there, some scientific studies, etc., that are helpful at unlocking some of the questions that so many people who have been on these drugs, have children on these drugs, or are what we're now calling psychiatric survivors, you know, that they can utilize as a means to gather that fully informed choice before they make a decision. And I also try to do something that I think is kind of unusual, even though a lot of the people that gather on the site are psychiatric survivors and others. There are a lot of people who are just questioning, as you are, how can I get better information? And so when those people come, and they do by the hundreds, and they say, you know, someone said today, I've been on, I think he said Effexor, for 14 years, and I've had no problems, and it's helped me. My response is not to attack those people in any way, shape, or form. I always lead with, I'm glad you're well.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're here to serve people, because I have spent the past 20 years or so investigating the science, investigating the research, and, of course, most importantly to me, talking to multiple hundreds of families and individuals that have gone through this. So I think, you know, in part, when you write your elected officials or when you're even speaking to a doctor, if you have an article that's printed out from the BMJ, the British Medical Journal, or some other, you know, an even credible news story in an outlet, you can print that out or put it on your phone and bring it into your doctor and say, look, you know, I'm concerned about this. There's all kinds of reports about side effects from this drug. And even though I haven't, you know, had violent thoughts or something while on an antidepressant, there may be something else that I'm reporting on the site. For example, now there's newer links that are being proven with prolonged use of SSRIs and even SNRIs, the antidepressants, to Alzheimer's and to memory loss. And so these are the kinds of things that I try to put out there for people and create an environment for people who are willing to at least investigate some of the other things, contrary to possibly what's in their local newspaper or on their local television station.
Yeah, and the Facebook page, I've been following it. It really is terrific. There's been just a constant stream of really interesting articles on it. So, yeah, highly recommend that Facebook page. And a point there you made about a lot of people are happy on SSRIs, or they say they're happy. And right. This is very important to understand, because unless we incorporate that knowledge into our view, we're going to be biased, and we're probably going to come across as being a little bit extremist if we just try to take a very, very hardline position. However, sure. I think it's a complex situation, isn't it? Because I've seen a lot of the analysis of this, which comes from the alternative perspectives of people like Dr. Peter Breggin, who say that you can't always be sure when someone says that they're okay, that they are okay, because of the peculiar nature of the brain and some of the particular types of damage that is done to the brain by psychiatric medications and other treatments has a habit of actually damaging those very parts of the brain that are needed to actually know whether you are okay or not. And this is a very tricky subject to deal with, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But I would say one thing to you is that, again, when people come to me in person or after a film screening, or again online on the Facebook page or what have you, I'm very careful to not demonize their choices.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we talk about stigma, and I have an interesting take on stigma in the film, as you might recall, I claim that the drug companies and the regulatory agencies are actually stigmatizing the people that have taken the drugs out of good faith by the tens and hundreds of thousands, but have been harmed.
Yeah.
And then when the drug companies are fighting so vociferously against these lawsuits that pop up by the hundreds and thousands, then they're basically telling the people, no, it's not the drug. It's your depression that's the problem. And yeah. This is the reverse of that stigma, isn't it?
Indeed. And we're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be right back talking to Kevin P. Miller about his new film. Stay with us. Welcome back, you with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking today to Kevin P. Miller about his new film, Letters from Generation RX. Yes, Kevin, just before the break there, you were mentioning this phenomenon that we have, that where adverse reactions from drugs are often attributed to the depression or the mental illness itself, which can lead people to commit suicide and other things. And this, of course, is a very easy out for apologists for the medication and for the whole industry of the way people are treated with psychiatric drugs. I just wanted to make another point, which is that it's kind of related to what I was saying at the beginning. When we try to communicate about this, to communicate our knowledge as non-experts, but people who've got a lot of life experience, and I've got a lot of life experience. I've known a lot of depressed people. You know, I feel like I've experienced depression too. But here's another type of argument that's thrust at you when you try to bring this type of perspective, is people tell you, oh, no, you don't know about real depression. You've never been really depressed. And what a lot of people believe, and I believe this is a type of an argument or a type of a viewpoint, a propaganda viewpoint, which has been put forth by the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry, is that there is this very strict divide between what they call real depression, which is clinical depression, which is a chemical imbalance, and you're just not feeling too good, you're feeling down, you're feeling upset for whatever reason, and this belief is very, very deep, especially in the people who are on meds, is that because they say, I've got an illness, right? And therefore, because they've got an illness and because they have been told that their illness is a biochemical imbalance, it is a completely self-sustaining belief system, if you know what I mean. It is very difficult to get in there. Yeah.
Well, I think that the real truth is, and you saw it in the film, there's a reason that I put the director of the National Institutes of Mental Health, Dr. Thomas Insull, near the beginning of the film, because I somehow got an interview with him, to his credit,
yes,
because I fully believe that he knew who I was. It wouldn't have been too hard to discern.
Yes.
But he says at the very beginning of the film that, you know, that the industry, let's call it, the broad description of the mental health industry, that's pharmaceuticals, psychiatrists, even social workers, psychologists, others, have been really patting themselves on the back, that they've achieved these great breakthroughs and that they've changed lives. And while Dr. Insull does, you know, say that indeed some lives have been saved by these drugs, and I believe that to be true in an emergency situation. I believe that a lot of drugs and other things can be very effective for the emergency.
Yeah.
Get you off the ledge, for example, just for one instance. So, but he does say in there that while we're patting ourselves on the back, that the science proves that these drugs are in no way a cure, and nor have they been scientifically proven to work or even to have benefit.
Yes.
So, again, this is where this old position that you've heard from me in the past, where I've been fighting for 25 years for what I term medical freedom of choice.
Yes.
A lot of people, perhaps the more extreme elements that we've talked about in the past, and everyone knows who they are, they will tell you, no, we want these drugs banned. People should not have access. They are killing or hurting or maiming people, and they should just be pulled off the market. Well, look, I'm not in that position and never have been. My job is, especially as a filmmaker, is to make certain that you have all of the information that could humanly be collected from every perspective humanly possible. And then if you watch the film or read the transcript from the film or anything along those lines and still decide for yourself that this is the path that you need to go forward, or it's the best path for you, or that you're happy with the drug, then so be it.
Yes, I totally agree with you, Kevin, and I think it's really important to understand at least understand the libertarian perspective on this, because this what I basically see it is, it's a libertarian perspective, because I believe that people should have the right to use whatever helps them. And yes. One of the great people who spoke out about this was Thomas Zatz, who died recently. And you know, he's got some great material on YouTube where he talks about this problem that we have in society, where basically all medications, not just psychiatric medications, but just about everything that is potent, that works, is illegal without a prescription. And then this creates a situation where you have to put 100% trust in a doctor's decision. And of course, doctors are influenced by marketing just like everyone else. And so you have...
Well, one more important thing. I'm sorry to cut you off, but one more important aspect of this, since you're dealing with patient care, is that, as I've said in past interviews in England and elsewhere, is that no matter what system you're in now, even with a government funded system like in Canada or in UK elsewhere, is that the doctors still only have 5 minutes with you. And that's the huge shift. It's not like, you know, I'm older than you. So when I grew up, we actually had a family doctor, a GP.
Yeah.
And this man was marvelous. And believe me, he was old school. So, yeah, he would use the drugs sparingly. And, of course, there wasn't as much of a problem with the proliferation of these prescription drugs as there is now for families to face. But he would have conversations with you and find out what stresses you had, other things. And he wasn't afraid to even pull some old, you know, some tried and true old remedies, even if they were gasp, homeopathic, or what have you. So we've had this huge shift now, and yes, you're right. I mean, this is we're all taught now that we're supposed to genuflect before the white coat, as we do, a priest or someone else that we revere. And you know, the fact of the matter is that I'm a person that defends doctors because of their lack of time with patients. But I do not defend their lack of intellectual curiosity, particularly if you have a situation now where, okay, 5 years ago I did an interview after Generation RX, and I was more defending doctors because they assumed that if there was a study in the BMJ saying that antidepressants were helpful, and particularly so for teenagers or young adults, that why wouldn't they believe it? They believed that it had been scientifically vetted. And of course, we are now learning in the last 5 to 6 years since the first film came out that it's for the most part, and I mean the most part, I'm saying 95% or more, is nonsense. That it was commercially created science.
Yeah. So doctors are victims of this PR marketing campaign.
They are. They are victims of it, but they're smart enough to read the newspaper.
Yeah.
And I follow the newspapers in Australia close enough to know that even though it's more rare, that these things are being reported and have been reported over the last 6, 8, 10 years. And we are at the point now where anyone that takes the oath of first do no harm should at least have pause about it.
Yeah.
And yet we're not finding that. I met a whole bunch of people when I was in Tampa, Florida, just over the weekend screening the film, and had a great audience. And I had a great number of people come up to me afterwards and say, you know, I got started 2 years ago and then had all these problems, and then they weaned themselves off through withdrawals, really painful, horrific withdrawals that they were going through. And so there is no excuse for that at this point in the ball game. Even if you are a doctor and you put your heels firmly in the dirt and say, I believe in science, I believe in medicine, I believe in orthodox medicine, I believe in drugs, and you know, you've got to take a pause and just do what's best to gather more information for your people.
Indeed. And we are just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Really interesting discussion today. We'll be back for a couple more segments. Stay with us. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio, and my guest today is Kevin P. Miller, creator of Letters from Generation RX and Generation RX, two amazing films which explore issues with psychiatric medications, strong emphasis on people with depression taking SSRI drugs, but the latest film does get into a lot of other areas as well. Kevin, I just want to return to a point from that we were discussing earlier, where you said in your discussion with the NIH director, can you just repeat who that was in the film?
Yes, it's Dr. Thomas Insel, and that's spelled I-N-S-E-L.
Yeah.
And he's the director, actually now he's the former director of the National Institutes of Mental Health. He
right.
has taken a what I imagine is a pretty cushy job with Google.
I see.
As their health community, whatever he's doing with them, but something regarding health, of course.
That's very interesting. And was he in his position at NIMH when he spoke to you, or was he already
yes.
at Google? He was.
Okay. Yes, he was.
Okay, so that's interesting. Now, the point that he made, that these drugs do not cure depression, is very important because it gives the lie to what we're saying was basically a marketing campaign that these drugs fix a chemical imbalance. I mean, that's what everyone was told. That's what we were told for decades. And it wasn't just SSRIs. Also, the antipsychotics were said to do the same thing. And the ADHD drugs like Ritalin. I mean, we're constantly told there's a chemical imbalance and this is fixing the imbalance. But basically that is nothing more than a kind of a marketing strategy. Does that seem a reasonable thing to say?
Oh, it's poppycock.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been proven. That's been clearly, definitively proven that there is no such thing as a chemical imbalance in the
yeah.
brain as it's constituted. Now, I mean, as a person, I can say this a couple of different ways, but you know, one of the things that I was going to mention earlier when we were talking about Australia
yeah.
is that on one hand, Australia has a very heavy hand in disciplining others and
yeah.
regarding medicine or making claims, or they also come very heavily down on the, let's call it the nutrition industry, or vitamin supplements, mineral
oh, yeah.
supplements, herbs, et cetera. The very heavy hand, one of the toughest of any democracy in the world. And this is the other side of the coin. And for years they could tell us, oh, well, those vitamin people and those people that want you to take vitamins and minerals or amino acids or herbs, they're just flapping in the wind and there's no science behind them. And they postured as if they had all of the science behind them. Well, listen, that bird has flown out the door.
Yeah.
That has been revealed as false. And so we should no longer, I'll tell you what I'd encourage all of your audience to do respectfully to doctors that give them a hard time about this or anything else, is that there is no science. And you can have them mention Thomas Insel, or have them show their doctor the film or a portion of the film, because it's how can the orthodoxy posture as if they have all the answers and it's all science based? The new catchphrase now is evidence based research, but yet they don't, and they're telling everyone else that they don't have any science, and they're telling everyone else that vitamins and minerals, et cetera, are harmful. So this is where the double whammy comes in, because they not only convince people, as you said earlier, to listen to their doctor and
yeah.
it's almost godlike, but then they're telling people, oh, it doesn't matter what you put in your mouth in terms of nutrition. It's not going to affect your brain. It's not going to affect your health or anything else. So, I mean, people need to be very skeptical about any kind of counseling or nutritional information that comes from a medical doctor, or even, dare I say, a licensed dietitian, because the dietitians are trained in the same way that doctors are. And this is where we get this ridiculous, well, in the United States, it's called RDA, recommended dietary allowance. And, you know, it's on the labeling on the side of a can of corn. It tells you how many carbs are in it, and how much fat, and how much salt, and
yes.
How much vitamin A is in there. So, I mean, you know, we need to be very careful, because these are the very people that are telling us that all you have to do is eat right and all will be well with the world. Well, clearly that's false. And that's one of the things, as you know, that I explored in the new film, Letters from Generation RX, through the Maolu Zen story of a family called the Steffen family out of Alberta, Canada.
Really important part of your film, which I want to make sure we cover, because a lot of what's in the film is very depressing. And, you know, we're dealing with a subject that's depression, but basically the material that we've got to deal with is very harrowing, and you can feel very negative from it. But there is a positive angle to this, which you cover, and it's a significant part of the film, which is that new ways of dealing with mental illness have been developed along the lines of nutrition. And the particular word that you use in the film is micronutrients. And this is something that I think I would love you to actually expand on. We might as well get into that now because we don't have a lot of time. Micronutrients is a new treatment modality which developed out of Canada. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah. And it's, there are a couple important points here I'll try to hit as quickly as possible. But we were just talking about the problem with the men in white coats and those in, quote, the orthodoxy. Well, you know, we talk about how they talk about, you know, vitamins and this, that, and the other. Well, in the film, we have a case of this family who they believed had cured their severe bipolar, OCD, depression, and two of their kids, including one child that was in a mental institution, in and out of a mental ward, another son who was very violent. And they just wanted a scientist somewhere to study these nutrients, these mix of mainly minerals, but also some vitamins and amino acids. And there's 36 ingredients in this product called it's called Empower Plus. And the literal hell that the establishment, Health Canada, Canada's FDA, put these people through, who were researchers at academic institutions.
Yeah.
And they wanted to do was study the micronutrients and to see if it was even humanly possible. And by the way, their first approach, when the family approached them to study, they thought, well, you guys are completely off your rockers. You've lost your mind. There's no way that taking in minerals and vitamins could have anything to do with brain health. And so they were very skeptical. And finally, they agreed to take on a pilot study. Well, they got a $500,000 grant from the province of Alberta in Canada. And Canada's FDA, Health Canada, came in and illegally pulled the money from that study. So, you know, on one hand, we have all these people screaming that there's no science to back nutrition claims, whether it's for vitamin A or for minerals.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, they won't even allow them to study to see scientifically whether or not there's any connection or any veracity to the belief that what you put in your mouth could affect your brain health. So, this is the part of the arrogance that comes from the healing arts, quote unquote, that we've been dealing with again for decades. And it's something that we really have to reverse as people. We have to protest and we have to turn the tables on them because it's critical. In the case of this family, we start the film with a harrowing ride in a Ford Bronco. And ultimately, this woman had a car full of her children and drove into a river while she was depressed. And so ultimately she committed suicide. Her kids started feeling the effects a few years later. And this father is just like, I'm going to lose my two children here. And so he was just committed to just having someone study it.
Yeah.
And the resistance has been so terrific. As we say in the film, the government of Canada spent $2 million pursuing this tiny nonprofit in rural southern Alberta near the Rocky Mountains. And they spent $2 million for if they had been
We're just going to break. Sorry, Kevin. $350
fine. Sorry.
We'll be right back for one more segment with Truth News Radio. Stay with us. Kevin, would you like to just continue from the thought there at the end of the last segment, talking about the family in Canada and their battle with the authorities?
Yes. Yeah, indeed. It's the Stephan family. They started a company called True Hope, and they created a 36-ingredient vitamin supplement and mineral supplement with amino acids and a few other things.
Can I just interject? Can I just ask, yes. Do you know how they came up with that particular mix? What were they drawing on? Where did they get their ideas from for that particular mix of nutrients?
Well, there's a number of things. They had someone on board with the company for years. And it was just two minds coming together, if you will. But
yeah.
there was a conversation between them. And one of the things that was said was, evidently, when you're raising pigs, commercially, that there's a lot of aggression. They lock them into a pen and they're really tight in there. So they start to get really aggressive and they start getting violent. They'll bite another pig's ear off or a tail off or what have you. And so it came to light that there was strong research in the animal research side of things and the veterinary side of things that if you just added minerals to their feed, that the aggression stopped. So it was this long, months long conversation. And then they basically were experimenting. They were trying various mixes of how many minerals of this amount and how many vitamins of that. And they were trying things individually,
yeah,
and ultimately used their kids as kind of the big guinea pig at the very beginning of it until they cured the two kids and they are still well 20 some odd years later. And they were able to get these researchers that I was talking about to do some of this research. Now there are 30 studies worldwide.
Wow.
About micronutrients and brain health. But, right before we went to the break, I was making a point of how the government of Canada pursued this family, and they are still pursuing them to this day through various other harassment, means of harassment. But they spent $2 million
yeah.
on what, if the company had been convicted, would have been a $350 fine.
Incredible.
So they pick out these outliers, and they basically, it's what the orthodoxy has tried to do to nutrition people for 25 years that I've been following. They will attack. They will use the government as their weapon.
Yeah.
And then they will try to bankrupt you. Because who can stand against the government and all the, millions and tens of millions of dollars that the government can bring to bear? But this family said, the heck with it. It saved our children and we're going to fight. And they spent... this tiny little company over the years, $750,000 fighting the government to keep their product on the market.
And is it still available now? I mean, can we order it online now?
Yeah, it is. It's True Hope is the name of the company. And I obviously don't have any, affiliation with them. I put them in the film because it was a fantastic story and it illustrated really what I've been observing over the last 25 years, anytime anyone would try to make a claim about any kind of nutritional supplement or anything being of value.
Yeah.
Now remember, we've talked in the past that I was involved in the early days when the FDA was fighting folic acid. And there was information in 1981 that was brought out by a doctor that said, if you take 400 micrograms of folic acid, any woman of childbearing age, if she's taking 400 micrograms of folic acid, that it will prevent over 99% of birth defects.
Wow.
Spina bifida.
Yeah.
And yet the FDA delayed that for 18 years. And then their solution was, it wasn't to tell people to go take a 1 cent folic acid pill. Their solution was to fortify the food supply with synthetic folic acid.
Yes, so Australia has an organization called the Therapeutic Goods Administration. It's not quite the same as the FDA. They don't sort of approve drugs, but they are a regulatory body, and they will pronounce certain things as being not acceptable, and they can make certain things illegal. If they recommend a certain product as being dangerous, it will end up going into legislation. It will become illegal. The TGA in Australia has had various things banned, including alternative cancer treatments, and some of these alternative cancer treatments are just amazing and are saving people. There's this thousands of testimonials over the internet about things like black salve, but if you try to sell it in Australia, you could go to prison. How strict they are. Now, what's the Canadian mixture called? What's the product called?
It's called, well, the actual product is called Empower Plus.
Empower
and
Plus.
The word EM Power with a plus sign on the end.
Right.
And it's I don't know that. I think their website's truehope.com. I'm not 100% sure because I haven't gone to it in forever, but. But they're still selling it, but they have to manufacture it now in the United States, even though they live in Canada.
Really? Well, that's
and
very interesting.
And they allow us, I think, I'm not sure if it's it's exactly the same formula in Canada. They might have to do a little bit less in terms of the ingredient amounts and everything else. Because, again, Canada, just like Australia, Canada's been banning things since 1992. I mean, they took L-carnitine off the market. They took all kinds of things off the market 25 years ago that haven't seen the light of day since. So I think, we're back to the medical freedom of choice conversation.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter. If they think we're delusional, fine. But they're obviously, in the United States of America, it's the largest, quote, test market for vitamin and dietary supplements in the world. More than half the population here takes dietary supplements on a daily basis. And you're talking about then, of course, 165, 170 million people minimum. And a lot of people believe it's more than 200 million people in this country that do so.
Yeah.
So where are all the deaths? Where's the harm?
Yeah.
Where's the poisoning? Where are the hospitalizations? They're not there. And yet this system still is in existence.
Well,
I think we talked about years ago, there was a 2009 study from the American Poison Control Centers, and there were zero deaths from vitamins in 2009. Zero.
Yeah.
And yet this kind of arrogance from the medical orthodoxy is allowed to continue to exist and thrive.
Obviously, because these products can't be patented, and therefore they can't be commoditized effectively. They could still sell them. The pharmaceutical industry does sell vitamins, but they don't make so much money. They don't make anything like the money they make out of their patented drugs. So if the pharmaceutical industry were to follow that research, sure, they could continue, but they wouldn't be no longer so powerful as they are. And of course, the power is what they're trying to protect, isn't it? It's the power in terms of all the money that they make, and that is dependent on our belief that we need these synthesized, unique drugs that only they create with their godlike powers.
Mm. It's true.
Yeah.
But, I mean, healthcare everywhere is a mess, and I'll never forget, I think I told you the story, I'm sure we're running out of time, but there were 33 Chinese bankers that I spoke to about 10 years ago, and they were coming here to try to get a glean of how small business people do business in America and the rest, and I looked them right in the eye. I was the most unconventional speaker of all these people, of course, and I said, look, if you want your economy to thrive, start investing in your own regional traditional Chinese medicines. If you want to bring your economy down, import Western medicine and give it to your 1.7 billion people, and your economy and the rest of the world economy will go down with you if you do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
Absolutely.
And by the way, the response was very positive to me.
And just another point about vitamins, vitamin C, the humble vitamin C, is now being recognized as being incredibly important in gum disease. I mean, this is something that dentists have not been telling us about for many years because the information has been there. But vitamin C is one of the most important things you can take to reduce gum disease. And it's a simple thing, but this information is actually now coming out through like peer-reviewed studies. So yeah, we are seeing a kind of a revolution in understanding health, which is just really basic. It's just about very, very simple things that we can do that somehow we've just been locked out of.
Well, you know how we're having this strange political movement here in the United States, of course, and he who I refuse to name on the Republican side, and then you've got Bernie Sanders, who's a very, you know, very liberal Democratic senator who's been saying the same thing for 30 years. Well, now the young people are looking at Bernie Sanders in particular, not saying he's going to win, but they're looking at him and saying, wow, that guy has integrity. He's been saying the same thing. He doesn't shift his positions. I think something there's a movement akin to that happening in medicine. The only problem is that healthcare is so dominant, such a dominant part of Australia and the United States and everywhere else's gross national product. Quite literally, it's 25 cents minimum off of every dollar that's spent on a national economy. It goes to healthcare, and it's probably two times that. But there's this movement now that people are insisting. And I would love to see Australia come into the 21st century and pass something like a DSHE movement, the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act, that we had here in the United States. It was passed in 1994. And it's the only reason we have access. And, you know, there's so many things. You and I could go on and on and on for hours, and it would be a privilege to do so. And it's just so great to have the opportunity to talk about these things in a way with someone as intelligent and insightful as you and your audience. So thanks. I appreciate all of your time.
Thanks so much, Kevin. And, this discussion is really just an intro to some of the thoughts and ideas in your film. And we've barely touched on the film. I will continue to bring information to the listenership of this show, and we'll be talking to you again. Thanks, Kevin.
That sounds great. Thank you. Have a great day.
Great. That's Truth News Radio Australia signing off for this week. See you next week.